Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. J.D. Vance and Tim Walz will debate tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. Unlike the presidential debate hosted by ABC, CBS says it will not allow moderators Nora O'Donnell and Margaret Brennan to fact-check tonight's debate in real time. Claudia Milne, senior VP at CBS, told the New York Times, quote, "The goal of the debate is to facilitate a good debate between the candidates, and the moderators will give them the opportunity to fact-check each other in real time," end quote. This decision comes as J.D. Vance has doubled down on his dangerous and racist lies about Haitians eating pets in Ohio. He recently told CNN that he was willing to, quote, create stories so that the media actually pays attention. J.D. Vance has also made nonstop headlines for calling women without children childless cat ladies and criticizes child-free women. He is staunchly anti-abortion and said he would support a national abortion ban. With so much at stake, where does J.D. Vance stand on other crucial issues? If Donald Trump wins the election, J.D. Vance is one step away from the White House. He's just 40 years old and entered politics as the senator of Ohio only 2 years ago. So why did Trump choose him to be his running mate? Joining us are two guests who have written about J.D. Vance. David Lurie is a lawyer and writer for the Public Notice newsletter. Hi, David. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Amanda Marcotte is a senior politics writer and author of a biweekly politics newsletter called Standing Room Only at Salon. She's also author of the book Troll Nation, How the Right Became Trump-Worshipping Monsters, set on rat-effing liberals, America, and truth itself. Hi, Amanda. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have both of you. I want to start by asking you to share something about J.D. Vance that we might not know, because he just came onto the scene 2 years ago. Of course, a lot of people know him from his book, Hillbilly Elegy. And I, the cat lady comments are getting so much attention. Obviously, the racist lies about Haitians are getting so much attention, but I'm guessing that people don't really know much else about him. So, Amanda, what else do we need to know about J.D. Vance that is not getting the attention it deserves?
He's even weirder than I think the public image of him already has allowed, which is saying a lot because I think most Americans think the guy's a weirdo. But he really is deeply involved in the online alt-right world. He follows thinkers like Curtis Yarvin, who believes in ending democracy and replacing it with a dictatorship. He's been funded by Peter Thiel, a tech billionaire who, again, has a great deal of writing out there about how democracy has failed and needs to be replaced with a, you know, king or monarchy or some other kind of dictatorial form of government. So it's always interesting to have people running for office who don't think that should be a thing, but here we are.
Yeah, and I'd love for you to elaborate on all of those issues during the show, because unless you're really doing some digging and reading about this, a lot of people probably don't know about these connections. David, what would you add? What else do you think we need to know about J.D. Vance that's not getting the attention it deserves?
What I, apart from all of those points, which are extraordinarily important, having followed him for a number of years, what really strikes me is how strongly he asserts views that he is willing to discard at a moment's notice. He has absolutely no compunction about taking what he asserts are strongly principled views and reversing himself entirely on those same issues. I spent several hours over the weekend reading the opposition research memo that the campaign prepared about Vance. And as you flip through the document, which is 176 pages, you find him literally being on the opposite side of very, very important, serious public policy issues from year to year. For example, in 2017, when the Trump administration was essentially implementing the Ryan, Bush, tax policies in their most extreme form, and attempting to void the Affordable Care Act, Vance was a constant presence on CNN arguing that this was a disaster for the working class and a betrayal of what he understood Trump to have campaigned on, to the extent that he had campaigned as a populist. And of course, last week, he articulated literally the Ryan position on healthcare, that is, that sicker people should pay higher and unaffordable rates for health insurance. So apart from the really bizarre and repugnant and weird views he holds, he's also willing to take any position that he finds to be helpful to him at the moment.
Well, it's clearly worked because Trump chose him to be his running mate. Given all of the work that you've done in researching J.D. Vance, David, why do you think Trump chose J.D. Vance?
Well, I'd like to learn what Amanda has to say about that. I speculate. I mean, there are theories that that have a conspiratorial edge, edge to them, and there are views that are mundane. But I think that a lot of it comes down to the fact that he's a supplicant and he's friends with Don Jr. And of course, it doesn't hurt that this clique of very wealthy people in Silicon Valley have been advancing him.
What do you think, Amanda?
I mean, the reporting is that J.D. Vance is close to Donald Trump's son and that he was instrumental in pushing Vance onto Trump. But I think that it's a mistake to think that Donald Trump didn't vet him or is unhappy with the choice, as a lot of people seem to assume. The reporting is that both Donald Trump and Donald Trump Jr. think that they did a great job, and that doesn't surprise me because the kind of whiny, combative, self-pitying, self-victimization strategy that Vance takes on the campaign trail is very complimentary towards how Trump approaches things, because that's what Trump does. He whines, he complains, he's forever the victim, and he thinks that works for him. So I'm not surprised that he thinks that Vance is killing it, even though the polls show otherwise.
In one of your latest pieces, you write that it seems Trump and his allies are pleased about this pick still, even though we hear the opposite in many media outlets. You write, "We were reminded of this again on Sunday when Donald Trump Jr. told Fox Business that Vance is outstanding. Every time I watch him, whether it's the Sunday morning shows just dismantling the left on their home turf, I just feel totally vindicated in all of that decision." And he does make the rounds on the Sunday shows on a regular basis. But again, I want to ask both of you, since we have the time, to go a bit deeper into who J.D. Vance is and how things have transformed. You touched on this, David, how his views have transformed. Amanda, can you talk a little bit more about his connections with the far right and a lot of these men who most people have never heard of, a lot of pastors, young, hardcore far right men? Can you just tell us more about that world and how J.D. Vance fits into it?
Yeah, a lot of these clips that we've been hearing that have been released slowly over the past few weeks that show him talking about childless cat ladies and saying other incendiary things come from him spending years doing the rounds on like far right podcasts of all these people that most of us have never even heard of. And that's not a coincidence, because that's the waters that he swims in. I mentioned Curtis Yarvin, who is this self-proclaimed political philosopher, who's actually just a computer programmer who writes wordy blog posts. But he's a huge influence on not just Vance, but the entire like world of Silicon Valley billionaires and other venture capitalists that Vance lives in, the Elon Musks, the Peter Thiels. And they spend a lot of their time pushing this idea that democracy has failed, that it needs to be replaced with what they call a CEO style government, which Yarvin openly says is a dictatorship, right? And that's kind of the world he lives in. He's converted to Catholicism a few years ago. And like a lot of people who make that journey, he's gone hard into what they call the trad Cath world, which is just traditional Catholics, which is to say people that most Catholics don't really take too seriously, like things like the prohibitions on contraception or even abortion. But, you know, a lot of these kind of trad Cath people, they get into Catholicism because they want an ideology that's hyper-patriarchal, that's very much around the idea that women's lives are meant to be giving birth and raising children and really not much more beyond that. And, you know, they also like things like the traditional Latin mass and everything else. But I think the biggest draw for a lot of these men is this extreme anti-feminism. And we hear that again and again, that it leaks out of Vance and all of his attacks on quote-unquote cat ladies, because that's sort of his point, is that there's something profoundly unnatural about a woman who doesn't have children, or even just a woman who waits until her late 20s, early 30s to start having children, which incidentally his own wife did.
I noticed on his Twitter bio, it says Christian husband, dad, U.S. Senator for Ohio.
Yeah, I mean, I am struck, as I said, I actually don't believe that J.D. Vance has particularly strong beliefs in the sense that he has any principles that he adheres to. But the attributes of, you know, kind of Opus Dei Catholicism, you know, the man referred to, I have no doubt that they do appeal to him. And it's interesting because there is an element of this that on J.D. Vance's own account ties in with his own childhood. He has recounted his, you know, what he considers to be the unhappy state of affairs in the town he grew up in Ohio, a neighborhood he grew up in, Middletown, Ohio, in, is comprised largely of internal immigrants from Appalachia. And what he said was, you know, too many of the people he grew up with, including his mother, had lost connection to organized religion. And he says that his father, he credits his father, who he had spent very little time with, but did live with for a while, for connecting him to a church. And the church his father connected him to, on J.D. Vance's account, was a extreme, you know, right-wing politicized church. And as a teenager, Vance has recounted, he spent time on AOL message boards. This is his account, saying that, arguing that the United States is under the power of the devil, which he identified with gay people and the UN. And he said that he strongly believed those things. Now, when he first began recounting this, when he was on the publicity tour for his book, in 2015 and 2016, he mocked his teenage self. But last week, he appeared with a Christian nationalist who says the country is under the power of the devil, in the form of gay people and et cetera, et cetera. So there's a real parallel. And while he's now a Opus Dei, you know, right-wing Catholic, he's obviously highly comfortable once again appearing with just the kind of right-wing, you know, evangelical leaders that on his own account he was under the sway of as a teenager. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, kind of circle for him.
You're talking about the preacher Lance Wallnau?
Exactly, yeah.
So just to let people know more about this, Judd Legume with the Popular Information Newsletter tweeted, over the weekend, J.D. Vance appeared at a conference hosted by a preacher who said Kamala Harris is possessed by the devil. At the conference, known as the Courage Tour, radical preacher Lance Wallnau suggested the U.S. was faced with a choice between anarchy, a satanic agenda channeled through Democrats, and embracing Christianity under Trump's leadership. After J.D. Vance's appearance, there was a presentation detailing how Christians who believe Trump's lies about election fraud can become paid election workers in four easy steps. Amanda, I have to ask you, we have a lot of listeners who are so concerned about their Social Security, about their health care, about the homeless crisis, about poverty, the climate crisis. There are so many pressing issues right now. And yet here we are talking about J.D. Vance going to a conference hosted by a preacher who says Kamala Harris is possessed by the devil. Why is it important, do you think, to talk about these things and to draw out these connections between people like J.D. Vance and these preachers?
Well, if you're worried about your Social Security and your health care, then it does matter, because Lance Wallnau isn't just like a crazy talking preacher. He is part of a movement of Christian nationalists who were deeply involved in the January 6th insurrection. And the reason that they are is that they believe and they preach that it's called the Seven Mountain Mandate. Lance Wallnau is a big proponent of it. And it's this idea that there's seven pillars of American society. I won't get too deep into it, but the basic premise of it is that far-right Christians need to control every lever of power in society. And what that means for you and your healthcare and things like that is that they want to rearrange government so that all of your social benefits, all your policies, all the things that you are that matter to you, material in your life, are dependent on your submission to their particular worldview. They just don't think that the government of America should be there to serve all the people. They think it should be there to serve conservative Christians. Mm. We see the like overlapping of that mentality with things like J.D. Vance's promise to help Donald Trump overturn the Affordable Care Act and replace it with this a return to a privatized health system. But in a lot of ways, I think that's going to be worse, because they really want it to be kind of contingent on everything to be contingent on people submitting to this moral structure that they believe is best for everybody. So you can definitely see a future where things like healthcare and other benefits kind of only flow to people if they are doing this, living the lives that people like J.D. Vance want them to live. And he says this very openly all the time. He was recently proposing that we tax people who don't have children more in order to punish them for not having children earlier in life, things like that.
Right. Yeah, this is really important. David, what would you add if, for people who are really concerned about day-to-day issues, again, Social Security, healthcare, the cost of living, why is it important to spend time talking about some of these people that most of us have never heard of and their connections to people like J.D. Vance?
Well, I think that many of the people who we haven't had may have, that were obscure for many years are being ushered into the mainstream, you know, not only by J.D. Vance, but by Tucker Carlson and others. And I don't actually take their, you know, particular, kind of exotic social, you know, plans that seriously, but they are fascists, you know, and they do hold fundamentally, as Amanda said, to a view that the largesse of the society should be directed toward people who are in J.D. Vance's, and this is the term he uses, doing good, in his view. You should be rewarded for doing good, and you should be denied benefits for doing good. J.D. Vance is not, has, you know, over many, many years stated that he does not agree with libertarianism. He does not agree with Bush and Reagan era Republican policies. What he does believe in is a government that uses its economic and police power, as Amanda said, to induce, if not force, people to do what is believed by Vance and others to be the right thing. And this is, in recent years, has been most frequently manifest in Vance's views about sexuality. He's become obsessed, truly obsessed in recent years with the proposition that women, and I, you know, white women, certainly, you know, Native American, as opposed to immigrants, should be induced to have as many children as possible. And this is not, it's not a coincidence that that this has a real parallel to, you know, to some of the policy focuses of the Nazis, you know. And, and again, I'm not trying to use inflammatory language, but there's a, it's not that this doesn't come from nowhere. The idea that that there has to be more and more reproduction, you know, of native-born Americans, and that we are at risk of being overtaken by those from other cultures and other societies. It's truly the thing that Vance comes to over and over again, and you can really see it as almost like the unifying theme of a lot of the rhetoric that he articulates. And I do think that this gets also to another point I agree with Amanda on, and I wrote a piece about today. It's absolutely clear that Trump and Don Jr. are overjoyed with Vance. Vance, and this is pretty unusual, is a vice presidential candidate who's driving the themes of the Trump campaign. That's very unusual for a vice presidential candidate. The Trump campaign has been singularly focused on this bizarre pet-eating claim. They've now been searching for other towns in which they're Haitian so they can argue that other towns are being invaded. And again, this is deeply intertwined with Vance's obsession with, you know, the culture, whatever, however he defines it, being polluted, the immigrants overtaking the population of the country and somehow changing it, as they put it, in a fundamental way. So certainly people should be concerned about what's going to happen to Social Security. Certainly people should be concerned with what's going to happen to healthcare, but this is quote-unquote culture-based ideology that is in my view dangerous because it's fascist in nature, and it's truly become the key theme of the Trump campaign going into the last weeks of a presidential election. And that is something that we've never seen before in this country.
Well, and talking about Vance and the dangerous lies he has doubled down on in Springfield, Ohio, the New York Times had a piece just a few days ago called "An Ohio Businessman Faces Death Threats for Praising His Haitian Workers." So this is the result of what these people say. For Jamie McGregor, and this is by Miriam Jordan, for Jamie McGregor, a businessman in Springfield, speaking favorably about the Haitian immigrants he employs has come to this: death threats, a lockdown at his company, and posters around town branding him a traitor for hiring immigrants. To defend himself and his family, Mr. McGregor has had to violate his own vow to never own a gun. He said, "I've struggled with the fact that now we're going to have firearms in our house. Like, what the hell? And now we're taking classes. We're going to shooting ranges. We're being fitted for handguns," he said. I mean, this is the consequences of this dangerous rhetoric. Today, we're talking about who J.D. Vance is, going beyond some of the headlines and the stories you're hearing out there that are just really normalizing all of this. Who is J.D. Vance? What do we really need to know about him? Why did Trump choose him as his running mate? You can join us, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Of course, we will always talk about the issues. So here's a headline from the 19th. Health plan floated by J.D. Vance could weaken protections for pregnant people, and it could also weaken the Affordable Care Act's protections for pre-existing conditions. That's really important. But as our guests say today, we've also have to look at the bigger picture about the worldview that these people hold, and then how that would trickle down to all of us. Today, we're joined by David Lurie, a lawyer and writer for the Public Notice newsletter. Amanda Marcotte is senior politics writer at Salon and author of the book Troll Nation: How the Right Became Trump-Worshipping Monsters, set on rat-effing liberals, America, and truth itself. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will open the lines to get your take on tonight's debate between J.D. Vance and Tim Walz. It is airing at 6 p.m. Pacific time. And ABC got a lot of praise for fact-checking the presidential debate in real time. David Muir and Lindsay Davis, but CBS says it will not allow tonight's moderators, Nora O'Donnell and Margaret Brennan, to fact check in real time, which is very unfortunate because I've been watching a lot of clips, J.D. Vance on CNBC, a lot of media outlets, and he lies on a regular basis. He just told CNBC that immigrants are receiving Social Security, undocumented immigrants. That is just not true. And it is just a regular thing with him. So we'll see how this Tim Walz is going to have to fact check him. So we'll see how that's going to play out tonight. Today, we're joined by Amanda Marcotte, senior politics writer at Salon and author of the book Troll Nation. David Lurie is a lawyer and writer for the Public Notice newsletter. Amanda, I want to ask you about J.D. Vance's obsession with child-free women in a minute, but what are your thoughts about what David said? Obviously, we're going to continue talking about Social Security, healthcare, poverty, the climate crisis, but we also really have to talk about their worldview. And J.D. Vance is senator of Ohio. I mean, if he became vice president, one step away from the White House, how that worldview would really change the country and then really affect all of us. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you think about what's going on in Springfield in particular, I really want to underscore that this is not just J.D. Vance and Donald Trump grabbing onto this like one random issue to sort of rile people up. This was ingrained even in his RNC speech, which I pulled up. He said, you know, one of those things that you hear people say sometimes is that America is an idea. And he disagreed, saying, America is a group of people with a shared history and a common future. And he then went on to talk about his family and the cemetery they're buried in, and defined that as the true America, what makes Americans Americans. And that is what we call blood and soil fascism right there. Like, he said it during the RNC. You know, he tried to sort of truss it up by saying that there was an allowance for some amount of immigration, but the reality is that they have made this campaign about the idea that what Americans should be is an ethnic group, a white Christian conservative ethnic group, and that everyone else isn't truly American and either should be put on notice or deported entirely. And I think that that should worry people, because once you believe that you can start eyeballing people and saying who's a real American and who's not, then in a lot of ways, you know, you may think you're safe, but I think a lot of us aren't as safe as we used to think we were. I mean, the reality is that a lot of us may have different views than them, or we may be not off the boat a little more recently in our family history or whatever. If you start drawing these lines saying who counts and who doesn't count, then you may think you're safe, but you'll often find yourself on the wrong side of that line. And, you know, my family certainly doesn't go back seven generations in the United States like J.D. Vance says his family does. So, like, am I less American than he is just because I'm only second generation? You know, there's real questions here.
Hmm. And according to ABC, J.D. Vance says mass deportation should, quote, start with 1 million. He's sounding a bit angrier just based on my read on the campaign trail. When a reporter asked him about this, he basically said, we're going to find the criminals and get them the hell out of this country. So that's really important. I'm glad you brought that up. Also, he says that family separation is another possibility. Amanda, you have been at this for a long time, and I wonder what your thoughts are about media coverage of all of this. I feel like so many in the media are still trying so hard to just normalize all of this. I mean, we're barely even talking about family separation and the fact that so many kids still have not been reconnected with their parents. And here are J.D. Vance and Donald Trump are talking about mass deportation and the possibility of even more family separation. What are your thoughts overall about major media still trying to normalize these people?
I think part of the problem here for journalists is that they look at the polls and they see that there's actually a shocking amount of support for these ideas, for mass deportation, for hardline anti-immigration policy. And so they think, well, it is normal. But what they're kind of failing to understand is that one of the reasons that so many Americans are fine with this is that it has been normalized in the media, that these ideas get talked about in a way that makes them sound like they're normal policy as opposed to what they're actually going to be, which is, and this isn't something Trump hides. He has repeatedly bragged about how it's going to be bloody, how it's going to be violent, how you know, putting millions of people in camps with some vague plan to deport them is not something that you do without killing lots and lots of innocent people. And that's in the best case scenario. Now, do I think he will necessarily be able to pull this off? I don't think so, but that's the plan. And the only reason I think a lot of people have sort of decided this is normal immigration policy is because the media doesn't highlight the fact that Trump just keeps talking about how it's going to be bloody and there's going to be a purge and whatever.
What are your thoughts, David, about major media coverage?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm going to break up the conversation with a little bit of a note of optimism. It's okay.
Sure.
There isn't a lot of evidence that the majority of Americans are attracted to Trump's performative sadism, or to DeSantis's performative sadism. It's an unfortunately large portion of the country, but it's not, it has never been the majority of the country. I'm not a political consultant, but I think the Trump campaign is making a tremendous mistake in closing their campaign with a amped up version of, you know, Ron DeSantis's performative sadism, you know, toward immigrants. We'll see, but it repulses a lot of people, you know, as it should. And that's something to keep in mind. Now, as for how the press reports on this stuff, I'm the first person to agree that it's utterly failed to do so. I mean, and it's not an issue of, as so often argued, of the press being too objective. It's a problem of the press not doing reporting. You know, we've been speaking today about facts, about what J.D. Vance has said, what he, you know, what positions he takes, and the fact that he's, very enthusiastically advocating cruelty toward families and children is something that I think he and Trump can get away with because they can say it to their audience and have relative confidence that it's not going to be featured in the way that it should, just as a factual matter, by the press. That is the extremism of what they're advocating. So that's a systemic problem, and it's not unrelated to the announcement that you referred to by CBS. Let's recall that there were two key fact checks. There were not very many, but there were two principal fact checks during the by the moderators during the last presidential debate. One was to rebut the defamation toward the Haitian residents of Springfield, and the other was to rebut Trump's now habitual claim that mothers are murdering their newborn children. Those are the two principal fact checks. And they were important, right? And they were done presumably because those assertions were so repugnant and so utterly false. There was no ambiguity about the fault. By the time that Trump made that statement about the situation in Springfield, it had already been definitively rebutted. And of course, the claim that Trump's been making for months that that women are executing their children is, of course, a vile, misogynist defamation. So they were very extreme statements, and they were rebutted. Now, for CBS to say, you know, we really don't want, in the event that Trump or that Vance, as he likely will do, makes some extraordinarily false statement like Trump did, we are not going to take 15 seconds to point out that it's factually untrue. That, again, is certainly not unrelated to the reticence of the press to report on some of the material that we've been discussing today.
Well, I want to play a couple of clips. I'd love Amanda to talk about why he is so obsessed with women who do not have children, and then we'll get to a few calls. So J.D. Vance has said he supports a national abortion ban. In January 2022, he called for a federal response to stop women from traveling to states where abortion is legal.
Okay, look, here's the situation. Let's say Roe versus Wade is overruled. Ohio bans abortion, in 2022 or 2000, let's say 2024. And then, every day, George Soros sends a 747 to Columbus load up disproportionately black women to get them to go have abortions in California. And of course, the left will celebrate this as a victory for diversity. That's kind of creepy.
Health justice is only exterminate black people.
Something like that could, that would be a really weird turn of events that could happen. Yeah. Yes.
And it's like, if that happens, do you need some federal response to prevent it from happening? Because it's really creepy. And, I'm pretty sympathetic to that, actually.
Here is J.D. Vance saying women who do not have kids are miserable and have no real value system.
To me, what it is sort of a value system to replace the fact that they're all fundamentally atheist or agnostic. They have no real value system. Their only value system is achieve in a very conventional way. And so the idea that somehow they're pursuing racial or gender equity is like the value system that gives their life meaning. Well, of course, they all find that that value system leads to misery, leads to unhappiness. And so I think that what happens is, like, whenever you really pursue something, right? Like, let's say a doctor gives you a medicine to cure a disease and it doesn't work, right? The patient gets worse. Well, you can conclude one of two things. Either the medicine isn't working, or the patient was so sick that what they need is even more of the medicine that you originally prescribed. And I think the gender inequity stuff is like, we need more of the medicine. Okay, clearly this value set has made me a miserable person who can't have kids because I already, passed the biological period when it was possible. And I live in a 1,200 square foot apartment in New York and I pay $5,000 a month for it. But I'm really better than these other people. What I'm going to do is project my racial and gender sensitivities on the rest of them. And the reason that our society is broken is because these people don't think the exact way that I think. Even though the way that I think has made me a miserable person, I just need to make more people think like that. So we're going to teach this in our schools, in our universities, even in our elementary schools, because once everybody agrees with me, then everything will finally come full circle and we'll have a happy, healthy society.
One more clip on this. Here is J.D. Vance calling people who do not have kids psychotic.
Right, there are just these basic cadences of life that I think are really powerful and really, really valuable when you have kids in your life. And the fact that so many people, especially in America's leadership class, just don't have that in their lives, I worry that it makes people more sociopathic and ultimately our whole country a little bit less less mentally stable. And of course, you talk about going on Twitter. Final point I'll make is you go on Twitter and almost always the people who are most deranged and most psychotic are people who don't have kids at home.
So Amanda, J.D. Vance talks about this regularly and has talked about this regularly in the past on various podcasts. Why is he so obsessed with women who do not have children?
Well, I mean, honestly, a lot of the time I have to wonder if there isn't just some amount of projection going on, because the only person in this equation saying everyone has to make the exact same choices as everyone else is him. And yet he projects that onto the left. He says that people who don't have children are telling everybody else that that they have to be just like us. And I'm like, I've never told someone that they shouldn't have children. So that's just a flat out lie. He's the one who is trying to force everyone to conform to a certain lifestyle. And what's interesting about the way he talks about women is the through line here is that he just cannot allow that women are people who have functioning brains that can think for themselves and make choices based on their own experience, their own knowledge of themselves, their own life, and things like that. And like, so it's all, he just talks about women's choices as if they were not choices at all. It's just a matter of who is actually controlling, who's actually pulling the strings. So no one in his worldview chooses to have an abortion. That's not possible. It's just a matter of whether they're being controlled by him or they're being controlled by George Soros. But it's never them making the choice. No one ever chooses to be childless. They've just been manipulated by the woke media. It's not possible that they actually just didn't want to have children. His contempt for women, and it's gross that he frames it as concern, especially when he tries to racialize it as if, you know, he's trying to pretend that he's concerned for Black women, when in fact what he's doing is saying that Black women are incapable of making their own choices and therefore have to be forced by law to have children, and they'll thank him for it later because they're not smart enough to know what they want. It's really gross, and it's count, and I hate to even point out, like, it should be self-evident that that's not true, but like, the evidence is actually the opposite. Like, we know that the majority of women that are having abortions are mothers already. Right. So the notion that they don't know what they're doing, that they don't know what they're quote unquote giving up, is false. Like, they know exactly what motherhood is, and that's why that knowledge is informing their choice.
Well, we have a couple of callers who've been waiting patiently, so let's hear from these callers, and then we will get responses. Let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Thanks for holding.
Hello. Thank you. You know, I wonder if your guests can comment on this. They may have made some reference to this. I just find it hard to believe that if a large number of people who are supporting Trump and Vance really understand what Project 2025 would mean, or these policies that Vance is talking about, I have a feeling that there may be some people who really understand what this could mean for them, not just other people, but for people who are supporting them. So I'm just wondering if they have any idea how deep this support goes for these issues, because I can't believe that most of the people who are supporting them really know about Project 2025 or understand these policies that Vance is putting forth.
Well, thanks for that, Greg. We have time for one more caller. Just briefly, let's go to Suzanne in Oakland. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi. Okay, so many things, but I'll start with, first of all, polls are 100% of how many people polled. They don't tell a true story of numbers of people who are believing in these things. So I take polls, you know, with a big grain of salt. Secondly, I think the media, our journalists, have fallen down way back when Trump was in his first term. And the way that they covered things is because he would always come out saying something, and their line was, this is unprecedented, this is unprecedented. Okay, it's unprecedented, but go a little bit further. Can we, like, how about the lies that he allowed? And so the media went for sensationalism versus truth, and not speaking to the lies that were obvious lies, provable lies, and calling them out for that. You can't just let this ride. You let it ride, it becomes normalized, and it also becomes, well, that's just Trump. Well, look how dangerous just Trump has been and what he did and didn't do. I mean, the pandemic, and how he stood on the knowledge of the pandemic and how bad it was for months without making any kind of moves towards, you know, getting protective gear. He could have made rubber factories make protective gear.
Suzanne, thank you for the call. I'm so sorry to cut you off, but we only have 2 minutes left, and I want to make sure we get our guests to respond. David, your final thoughts, and just to think about the prep for tonight's debate, given that there's not going to be real-time fact-checking, what are you hoping comes of this debate? I hope that they ask substantive questions. We haven't even talked about the climate crisis. According to Climate Power, J.D. Vance is a top recipient of big oil funds and has very close financial ties to the oil and gas industry. We have about a minute left.
Well, I hope and trust that Waltz is going to bring out what is most repugnant about Vance, which is his fundamental cruelty and lack of empathy, which I think is really the underlying theme that we've discussed most today. And I trust that will happen, but we'll see.
We'll see. Amanda, your thoughts, 30 seconds.
Yeah, I hope that Vance, he's a slick liar, but I do hope that the sort of fundamental, like, creepiness of him comes across to viewers tonight. I don't think he hides that aspect of his personality very well, so I'm a little optimistic on that front.
Amanda Marcotte is a senior politics writer for Salon and author of the book Troll Nation, How the Right Became Trump-Worshipping Monsters, set on rat-effing liberals, America, and truth itself. David Lurie is a lawyer and writer for the Public Notice newsletter. David and Amanda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. We hope you can join us tomorrow. We will talk about tonight's debate. You can hear it at 6 p.m. Pacific time. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering today's show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Yeah.